Wednesday, the 9th of August, of course it is. Thanks for joining me. It's always great to be with you. Music from The Clash at The Magnificent Seven. 21 and a half minutes, it is past the hour. Let's welcome back to the programme a very good friend of mine. We've been speaking on the radio since my days in Spain, would you believe that? He presents the Not the BCFM Politics Show, Bristol Fridays. It's excellent. Thisweek.org.uk website. Check out Bilderberg.org as well. Former BBC journalist, welcome back. Tony Gosling, how are you?
Very well, Richie. How are you?
I'm great, pal. Thanks. Thanks for coming on. I always love chatting with you. I know you gave a speech recently, not far from Downing Street, to a group concerned with the activities of NATO. I really want to get into that in a few minutes because it's fascinating right now. But let's kick off with something that I read in the Times today. A story about Larry Ellison, a tech billionaire who founded Oracle. And he's giving tens of millions of pounds to the Tony Blair Foundation to create a vaccination database in Africa and also to create a kind of a health security initiative in Africa. How dystopian does health security sound? Now, you said to me today, before you come in and I get out of your way for a minute, that don't get overly excited about that. You didn't think the Africans would have too much of an appetite for Tony Blair. Go ahead.
No. And what's this guy's name again? Sorry?
Larry Ellison.
Right. Larry Ellison. I did look him up after I spoke to you. And he's basically a kind of Gates character. So these people were recruited, many of them in the 1970s and 80s, on this. The idea really was to make sure that the computers and the software that was being used on them were all controlled. Well, I mean, I think I can say this on your show, by the Nazis. Now, I mean, you know, obviously Gates is really a CIA person. I mean, the idea was an NSA. The idea was that as Microsoft was to grow Windows, everyone was going, wow, isn't this amazing? Put it all on our PCs. That the American National Security Agency was going to have a backdoor into everything. And I think we heard from Edward Snowden quite a lot about that, because the idea is to put the entire world under surveillance. Now, Oracle was always one of the earlier programming languages. And I mean, I'm not sure if this is the same Oracle, but if it is, this guy is, you know, he's on the level of Gates. So he was one of the people who was recruited very early on to make sure that all this stuff was their stuff, everything that was being used. And the intention was all over the world. So the Chinese, the Russians, the Africans, the Australians, everyone was going to be using this because the Americans were way ahead of the game. That was the plan. Now, of course, since then, we've seen the Chinese and the Russians particularly developing all sorts of software of their own. And in fact, they started off with things like Yandex, which is based on Google Chrome, in more recent years, in the last 20 years or so, making out that they were kind of going to go along with it all. In the meantime, of course, the Russians are building weapons and developing weapons to fight the Americans and beat them. So I think that's the significance of who it is that's doing this.
Tell me this now. Tell me this very quickly. Tell me this. Where's the evidence that Bill Gates or Larry Ellison or any of these tech people? I've heard this accusation thrown at Elon Musk too. People say, not you, I'm not saying you're lazy, not for a minute, but you know the truther types. It's a lazy accusation. Is there any hard evidence that Bill Gates is a CIA-controlled asset or anything like that? Because I've never seen it.
I think you look at the early days of Gates and where he got all of his, you know, original contracts and money to go and develop this stuff, and where he got his mission to develop Windows. I mean, it wasn't just that this guy has decided that this is a cool thing to do and he's done it all on his own. No, he had the backing of the American secret state to do this. I can't pin down a specific thing. But I've read it in several, you know, several different good, credible places that's what Microsoft was tied to the secret state right from the start. And the idea of, you know, developing this. I mean, OK, so you go back to something like 9/11. This is how important this stuff is. On the day of 9/11, the operators of the air traffic control in the States and NORAD, the air defense system, were saying, well, hang on, is this real world or is this an exercise? Because things were appearing on their screens that shouldn't be there and weren't there. But that's because the other side had access in through the operating systems into all of their software. And that's why Gates did what he did, because he wanted to make sure that the operating systems all over the world were accessible, backdoors accessible by the powers that be. So, you know, if you connect up to the internet with one of these computers, the internet is going to be connecting up to you, and it can make things appear on your screen. I remember in the early days of the internet, I used to see all sorts of weird messages suddenly flash up when my computer was connected to the internet. And it hard evidence I can't give you right now, but I think, you know, anyone that really looks into this will find that Gates and Oracle, Microsoft Oracle, these original software companies in the States, were always designed to lead the way in personal computers, and also to provide a way in for, you know, in a way into that for the National Security Agency.
You said that before we talk about NATO, and we'll talk a bit about Ukraine undoubtedly, you said, just to go back to Blair for a minute, you said that he's not going to go down too well in Africa, and any plan that he has to create a database there might be scuppered by that very fact. But I don't get that. This seems to be the prevailing wind, doesn't it? Not just for Africa, but for everywhere, for every country in the world.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you look at the African states, they're now starting to realise that there may be an alternative to just AFRICOM. I mean, I don't know how much you know about AFRICOM, but it is the American military's command centre for Africa.
For Africa,
and it's based in Stuttgart. And the Americans have got this thing called, and your listeners can look it up, called the Unified Command Structure, where they've just divided the entire planet up into commands. And Stuttgart in Germany is where the Americans run Africa from. So this is the arrogance of the Yanks, that they think that the whole world is theirs and that they've got a military command for each one. Of course, they talk about, you know, humanitarian missions that they do. Well, that's the very, very small part of it. So I think the African countries are now realised. I mean, this coup in Niger is, I think, a case in point, is that the French have just been, you know, NATO has been booted out of Niger. That after, is it 150 years of the French being there, we've now got NATO in the form of the French being told no and getting their marching orders. So these countries have got a little bit of independence. They haven't got much wriggle room, but they do realise that if they do a deal with one of the big superpowers, that maybe that, you know, it might be that the Americans kick back. They might send a whole load of mercenaries in there to create havoc. As they've been doing in
Syria,
Sudan, isn't it?
And that's Syria,
right. And also, of course, in Ethiopia, similar tactics. So, you know, they say, well, if you're not going to deal with us, we're just going to send the maniacs in. So I think there is a little bit of independent, you know, possibility for African countries to be independent if they start doing deals with the. I mean, Port Sudan was really important because at the Port Sudan, the Chinese had been doing, or maybe it was the Russians, I can't remember which, but anyway, one of them had been doing deals with the government to have a naval base there, and at which point, you know, the rapid reaction forces, which are funded from one of the Gulf states, I think it's UAE, by the West, of course, that start killing people in, you know, in Mogadishu. And so this is the way geopolitics really works. If you're not going to play ball with us, we will just turn your country into a nightmare. And that's all the Americans seem to be able to do now. But look, I don't want to leave the Blair thing, because this whole business of, you know, the Tony Blair Satanic Research Institute, what's it called? I can't remember now.
Yeah, the Tony Blair Foundation, yeah.
Right, yeah, them. This database that they're creating in Africa, look, I mean, it's if I'm sure you're familiar with Edwin Black's work and the IBM and the Holocaust. Now, this was the original databases which were being created in the 1930s by IBM and the Nazis to put everybody in Germany under surveillance. Of course, they were doing it in other parts of the world too. But it was in Germany that it became so horrific, where all these bits and pieces on people's profiles could be selected at will, whether it's age, religion, whatever kind of you know, things that they had on their database, people could be selected town by town for elimination, arrest, and all this sort of thing. So this is the danger of these databases, is that, and which is why I don't think you know, anybody should have to be on any kind of a database to be, you know, for example, they're trying to bring people into these universal basic income, you know, this is you and the database, and if the database says no, you don't get any money.
Yeah, they want to centralize the medical records of everybody in every country so that they are accessible instantaneously.
But why should they not do that? Well, let's have a look at the track record in Africa. In Pfizer, I think it was in 2010 or 2012, there was a horrific scandal with their meningitis vaccine that Pfizer took in there, and they had set aside 30% of their budget, tens of millions of pounds budget for this research program that Pfizer had, for bribing and possibly assassinating police and judges and politicians. So that's the attitude that the vaccination companies have had in Africa. And of course, many of the Africans know this. So they think, well, if Pfizer turns up on your doorstep, what that really means is they just want to bribe some politicians, you know, in a similar way to the Pakistani politicians have been bribed to impeach and now arrest.
But Tony, hang on a second. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Pfizer, global pharmacological giant or pharmaceutical giant, there's no paper trail to suggest that the bosses of Pfizer said, let's make some money available to off some politicians to kill some police if they oppose our plans to roll out our jabs. I mean, is there any evidence?
It was mainly for bribery. There is evidence. And this is out. If people want to go and search for it, I think The Guardian had a good article about it. There definitely was. And this was all exposed by the Nigerian government.
Assassinations and stuff. So Pfizer were actually making money available to kill certain people if those people...
Well, I don't think they officially said kill, but some police were killed. But what they would... The money was there for bribery purposes of judges and politicians. And the idea was if any kind of prosecution started to emerge, that they would just... Pfizer would just turn up with a whole load of dollars, you know, cash, and say, look, let's just make this go away, you know. So,
yeah.
And they didn't. And Pfizer actually managed to get prosecuted over in Nigeria because the Nigerian... you know, some people in the judiciary and the government actually stood up to them. So that's how the scandal came out. But this is, I think, the sort of thing that your Tony Blair money is going into. And then, of course, if anybody listening hasn't seen the documentary Cold Case Hammarskjöld, which I was very privileged to speak to the producer who was working for Swedish state television. I did an interview with him about the documentary. And this is about the assassination of the UN Secretary General. I think it was in 1961, Dag Hammarskjöld. And it was the documentary was made by the Swedes, but fronted by a Danish investigative journalist. And in Cold Case Hammarskjöld, this was shown on the BBC late in 2019. And I was sitting there with my eyes out on stalks. It's, I think, 2 hours long. But what it does, what it shows is not only was the Belgian and English and British mining firms responsible for bribing this organization called SIMAR, which is a far-right, white supremacist South African private army, to assassinate Hammarskjöld because they didn't want the, you know, they had their own little battle going on because they were fighting governments in the middle of Africa to get mining concessions. And the governments were saying, no, we want you to pay more for this. And they were fighting the governments over that. And Hammarskjöld went down there, flew down there to try and sort things out. He was very much a hands-on Secretary General of the UN, and so these European mining companies and SIMAR collaborated to assassinate the guy. But in the background to all of this, as this brilliant investigative journalist dug into, it was a bit like a kind of really old, you know, full-on old-school World in Action style documentary. As they dug into the story, they realised that they actually managed to speak to one of the SIMAR guys who'd retired, who really wanted to just talk about it all because it had all been so horrific. And he actually admitted, and he said, well, one of the things that we were doing was deliberately injecting Africans in I think it was in Mozambique with the AIDS virus and saying it was a vaccination. So if you think you can trust the West, and any normal, you know, thinking Africans think they can trust the West with some kind of vaccination program in Africa. So they were actually, you know, trying out AIDS by injecting it into these people, saying you're going to get an AIDS vaccine. They weren't at all. By the way, they were white supremacists.
Hang on a second.
You know, I would like to see Black Lives Matter take this one up, you know, because I haven't heard anything from them.
They might not be aware of it, yeah.
You know, many, many thinking Africans would never trust any Western company or particularly a Tony Blair.
Well, hang on a second. There's a flip side to this, and I don't understand I don't understand your thinking here. We know that natural resources, Africa is rich in natural resources and minerals, right? We know diamonds, gas, uranium, copper, cobalt, iron. I mean, absolutely awash with these important minerals. And you talk about the US and maybe Western designs on Africa, and yet you give Russia and China a pass. I don't believe that. Let me finish.
Just not the case.
No, but you've spoken for 4 minutes. Hang on. You've spoken for 4 minutes. Let me hear.
There are big superpowers that are vying for these countries, and the Americans are being slowly shut out, I think, in some of them.
Yeah, and I don't understand why. And I'm not putting words in your mouth. I don't understand why anyone would make the case that the Africans would be better off with the Russians or the Chinese than they would be with the Americans. I don't share your, not support because you don't support them, you're a journalist, but I don't share your views of Russia and Vladimir Putin. To me, they're playing their own agendas and their own games, and they're equally as deadly for the peoples of their own countries as much as they are for Africa and anywhere else where they go and colonize. It's just colonies. It's colonization by other countries, isn't it?
If you go on to my thisweek.org.uk, my last week's program, we had a really good discussion about the coup in Niger, and you'll see there the BBC have even got an article, Richie, saying how actually many Africans think that it's better to get the French out and the Russians in, that it's much easier for them, and they feel a lot safer and they trust the Russians a lot more than they do the NATO
countries. Doesn't mean they're right, though.
So that's the BBC. That's an article, a BBC article about the Niger coup, explaining why and how so many people in Niger have said, well, look, you know, we've had enough of the Americans. We have found the Russians much straighter dealers than them. And so we're going to deal with them. We'll see how it goes. But it's certainly 25 years that they've been having probably more of aid from France, for example, and they've had no development, you know, no actual development. So let's try and see how we get on with the Russians.
You won't get me defending the British, the French, the US, the Israeli, the Irish governments. But I think it's fanciful. If Africans believe they'll get a better deal with Russia or with China, I don't believe that. But that's just my opinion. It doesn't mean I'm right. Tony Gosling is our guest now.
Before we leave Blair, we must say something about how he is running Starmer. Because I came across this the other week, which is amazing. When Starmer released his energy policy. Well, of course, energy is one of the major things that any party is going to be talking about. Half an hour before Starmer started speaking, the policy was released on the Tony Blair Foundation website. So this is where things are going. You know, we've got rid of Blair. No, we haven't. No, he's still there. And he and his chums are actually drawing up all the... And Mandelson, of course, is very much working with this in the background. And, you know, really, in many ways, Starmer is a creature of Mandelson. But get this. I mean, I don't know if you caught this last week, I think it was, about the Trilateral Commission.
Oh, yeah.
It was either Declassified UK or The Grey Zone, two excellent websites. Matt Kennard, I think, did a brilliant article about how Starmer had secretly joined the Trilateral Commission while he was in Tony Blair's cabinet. Now, he's not allowed to do that. He has to declare all of his interests as a member of the shadow cabinet to the Labour Party and to Corbyn. I think he was Brexit shadow Brexit minister or something at the time. But that was when he joined the Trilateral Commission. Now, two ex-bosses of the CIA are on the Trilateral Commission, the current one.
I've got it here.
So there is Keir Starmer. He's very basically good. CIA. That's what he is.
Well done. I've got it here. It's on declassifieduk.org. The photograph is there. The information is there. Well done. Absolutely. He should not be. That should be declared. Now, sometime between 2017 and 2018.
The Labour CIA party.
Yeah.
And I spoke last week to Crispin. Oh, gosh, can't remember his second name. But anyway, the guy that does the Not the Andrew Marr Show. I know we should talk about our competing programmes.
Yeah.
But he's pretty good on a Sunday morning every week. And he made a very, very strong case for saying, actually, voting in next year's general election, and he's one of the longest-running fundraisers for the Labour Party during the Corbyn era, did loads and loads of gigs and stuff to raise money. And then all that money, of course, went in a court case action, which Starmer just caved in. He said, oh, you know, well, yes, all this anti-Semitism, we'll just give all these people who are accusing us of anti-Semitism loads and loads of cash out of court. So, I mean, that's that's really, you know, that's what we're dealing with Starmer. I just think the guys, what, so anyway, what Crispin was telling me is saying, look, I mean, all, if from his experience, it'd be far worse. We're going to get a fascist style Labour government if Starmer gets in, because there's no free speech in the Labour Party now whatsoever. Everything.
None. Just look at Rosie Duffield. Look at Rosie Duffield. Where are you at Le Mans 24-hour race or something? I don't know what's going on. There's a drag race going on behind you. Tony Gosling is our guest.
Some guy on a motorbike is just enjoying himself.
Listen, I live in Salford. This is par for the course. You spoke at a really interesting meeting a few days ago. No to NATO. You were near Whitehall, near Downing Street, and you were talking to me about this morning, and talking about one or two facts that people might or might not know, dates that are important when it comes to NATO and the expansion of NATO further and further east. And of course, that's all too relevant right now with what is happening in Ukraine. Tell us about that No to NATO group and why people should be paying attention more than ever before to NATO, what it is and what it does.
Well, that's right. I think it was originally Chris Williamson, the former Labour MP, and George Galloway that got together to start this, because they were so pissed off with the Stop the War coalition and the way that they're at the top of their website, they were saying the Russians have got to get out of the Donbass. And this is, you know, this is after the Minsk agreement where they'd actually agreed, yes, the Russians can stay there so long as the Ukrainians aren't shelling the southeast, the Russian speaking parts of Ukraine. So the Stop the War people, of course, are never going to stop this war. You know, they've got loads of people out on the streets for the Iraq war, but there's no way they're even, it seems, interested in stopping the war in Ukraine. What I'd pose is this question is, what is NATO? And did a little bit of a look at history. And up until 1980, we had a whole load, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 senior NATO people, that is people at the top, like chairman of the military committee, all these kinds of characters at the very top of NATO, who were ex-Nazi officers. So people who've been fighting the Russians suddenly become the top of NATO. And the most important probably is Reinhard Gehlen, who is the head of the Nazis' secret service on the Eastern Front. And he then became the boss of the new German secret service, the BND. So, you know, the Russians are looking at all this, the Soviet Union are looking at all this, saying, well, hang on a minute, you've just taken all these people on who we were fighting just like 3 or 4 years ago. And they were being very, very suspicious about it all, quite rightly. And then I talked a little bit about the foundation of Bilderberg in 1954. This is just a compressed version. And in 54, I think it's a really significant, because the first Bilderberg meeting in Holland took place to form together the organization which was going to meet quite secretly, really private, they call it, I call it secret, in order to be the political lobby of NATO. So to make sure that NATO got its own way in political leaders right across Europe. And that was chaired for the first 20 years by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was a former SS officer. So you're starting to see how quite a lot of NATO is to do with the Nazi Party, to do with the SS. Then in 1966, a lot of people forget that President de Gaulle in France booted NATO out. He had enough.
That's right.
He was having all sorts of trouble with the Americans particularly. And so all the American troops were forced to leave on point of, well, we don't really want to send the French soldiers in, but we're going to give you 2 weeks, just get on planes and leave the country. And so the Americans did exactly that rather than face the French army. And that went on, of course, until, well, it's not of course, but we forget when the Americans were finally back with the French in NATO was under Sarkozy, I think in 2013 or 2014. So nearly 50 years NATO was booted out of France. And it was a fantastic film, The Day of the Jackal. I'm sure many of your listeners would have seen it, which was, you know, in the 1970s, they really knew how to make great feature films. And if anyone's not seen it, please watch it. It was supposed to be about one thing, but it's really about the Americans' hatred of de Gaulle for kicking NATO out of France. And so what it is, it's an unknown kind of force which is paying some hitman to bump off the French president, and the French security services are running around trying to get hold of this guy, and I won't tell you what happens, but they are fighting their way through to get hold of him. And then if we go on to the 1970s, we've got the Daily Express headline on Saturday, the 25th of November, 1972. Bormann is alive. Bormann is alive. Now, you know, Europe had spent 30 years thinking, where the hell is this guy? You know, we were fighting him in the war. He was Hitler's private secretary. He was the signatory of all the bank accounts. And he disappeared at the end of the war. And then the Daily Express, which was a Jewish journalist, Stuart Stephen, who was actually from Bristol, working up at the Daily Express in London by then. And they published photographs of Martin Bormann, 30 years older than he was during the war, obviously, in Buenos Aires, taken by Ladislas Ferrago, who wrote a book called Aftermath. And so this was an enormous, the Russians are looking over at this going, hang on a minute, guys, you've been looking after the top guy in Nazi Germany who was behind Hitler for all this time and trying to hide him. Well, someone's found him. And so then we had the publication of the various books around Bormann. I mean, I've spent a lot of time looking into this, but, you know, it is, I think, fascinating to see that although we know a lot about the United States and Operation Paperclip and the Nazis all going over to the States and, you know, Wernher von Braun and all that, you know, well known. But what's not well known is the 1944, before the end of the war, deals between Desmond Morton, who was Winston Churchill's private secretary, and Martin Bormann, who was Adolf Hitler's private secretary. And that's what my book, Traitors of Arnhem, is all about. But anyway, then we had in the 1980s, we had Operation Gladio. That is NATO killing thousands of Europeans and trying to blame it on communists. And, you know, that was really because places like Italy were actually going quite left-wing, and Italy had a pro-communist prime minister who was kidnapped and assassinated by NATO fascists, all blamed on communists.
So hang on, just a second. Because Gladio, of course, happened. It's accepted, it's in the public record. But for our listeners who are new to this, communists being, murders being committed on such a scale and it being blamed on communists, is there, again, direct evidence to the very top corridors of NATO, the ordering of Gladio? Is that in the public domain, that?
It absolutely is, because at least three countries, I think it was Belgium, Switzerland and Italy, did parliamentary inquiries into all of this. I mean, you know the way it works, that it's like in the UK, the Intelligence and Security Committee is at arm's length from government, and even at arm's, well, certainly it's a very long arm's length, maybe a foot's length from, a leg's length from the MPs, but even at an arm's length from government. So these committees are, and of course that gives them an excuse to get up to no good. And when they do, if in a decent democracy, what happens is the MPs and the government kick in and start to do some proper research, what the hell was going on there in our security meetings and who was ordering what and who knew what. But that happened in three countries. And I mean, if you really want to get into that evidence for this, probably the best book is Danny Eleganser and his book, which is called NATO's Secret Armies. That came out, I think, around about 2005, something like that. But the shortcut way to do it is just look at the evidence provided by the fascists that carried out the bombings. And that's recorded by Alan Frankovich, the American, Peruvian-born American film producer that made a three-part series for BBC Time Watch back in 1992. And that is an amazing series of interviews, of like thousand-yard stare interviews, you know what I mean, with these guys that were involved in actually planting the bombs. And some of them were interviewed in prison by Frankovich. So there's really no doubt that the NATO intelligence services, and particularly in Italy, P2, you know, the Propaganda Due Lodge, which was behind the scenes, was running Italy effectively for the CIA, and CIA money, American money, was funding all this because they were scared that the Italians might be so naughty as to vote for a really left-wing government, maybe even with a coalition with the communists.
If you had to sum up in a paragraph then, because the North Atlantic Treaty Organization purports to be a collection of countries who get together to defend their territory, their integral sovereignty, right? That's what they purport to be, or it purports to be. It's what it claims to be. If you summed up in a paragraph, now you've done enough radio and written enough articles over the years, your time at the BBC, what is NATO then, in a summary? What is it about? What is its aim, its secret aim?
The real aim is the world's biggest protection racket. isn't it? I mean, that's what it seems to me. The idea is that the NATO members, that's what they're in it for. And if you don't join the protection racket, you're going to get into all sorts of trouble. You don't do what the protection racket says. I mean, even if you were a few thousand feet on a sunny day above the NATO headquarters in Brussels, you'd look down and you'd see four Zigruns, right? That's the SSSS. That's what it looks like from above. That's the architecture that they decided they wanted for their headquarters in Brussels. I mean, you couldn't make it up. And the latest stuff, really, is, I suppose, last week we had an announcement from the CAA. It was the Civil Aviation Authority in the UK here. It was the ITN, I saw it first, and various other people have now covered it, leaked papers from the CAA where the Americans are now applying, and of course they'll get it. They wouldn't apply if they didn't think they could get it, to be flying drones regularly out of Fairford in Gloucestershire. So that's the first time the Americans have ever been flying these drones. We know what they do with them. They won't tell anyone what they do with them, but wherever those drones fly, they're not just sitting there taking pictures of you from 60,000 feet or however high they happen to be. They have missiles on, and they can target you. I mean, Dudaev was targeted with a drone which was just simply homed in on his mobile phone and blew him to pieces. So this is the capability the Americans have, and of course they're not going to tell anybody. So next time, that's why I said it at opposite Downing Street on Sunday at our No to NATO rally, is next time you hear of a political dissident killed in a random gas explosion in their flat, no, this is probably just simply an American Hellfire missile or drone. And what they're trying to do, Richie, is to just take out the human element. It's not just about not risking pilots by sending drones. They don't even like having controllers anymore. So they're trying to use Alex Karp's Palantir software to actually target the drones. And they've got even, of course, as we know, drone swarms that will think under AI, and they will just go and fight wars under AI. So, you know, what they're trying to do is to take the human element and even that little tiny bit of conscience out of war and hand the whole thing over to computers. And this is the dark enlightenment. This is where my old mate Nick Land comes in. And
yeah, there are people who see the geopolitical situation similarly to you. They see it as you've described it, right? But they disagree when it comes to the capability of AI. I've had people on this program who do know a little bit about this. They would see the word very similar as to you see it. They would agree with you on NATO and other issues like that. But they say that they're nowhere near capable yet of having an artificial intelligence program run a military operation acting entirely autonomously and figuring things out as it goes along, making strategic decisions. There are those who say that we're just nowhere near that. You know, singularity.
Well, I'll say Balderdash. Of course, yeah. We are. Look at these, all these video games, computer games, where you've got a computer to fight against in them. It's very, very simple to program these software to identify targets, number one, and three, two, to take those targets out. Right. So it's very simple to do. This is why I think there was all that hoo-ha about AI back in May and June, is they're saying, well, hang on a minute. If we just flick this switch here, these computers, Russian computers, will start fighting American computers. Actually, there was a report last week of the first ever drone killing someone without a person involved using computer software in Libya. So you can look that one up if you want. Somebody in Libya apparently became the first person to die because they were hit by a missile from a drone which had no human beings involved at all. The drone flew off on its own and the computer did the targeting and killing of the person. So this is why they love Ukraine. They love things like Libya and particularly Ukraine, because they can try all this stuff out, Richie. And they admitted at Christmas that Palantir software is being used for all the targeting of the Russians. Now, whether that it's every single piece of targeting is being done by that, but they're trying all this stuff out so they can just turn around, go off and play golf and let their computers kill Russians.
Tony, we're coming up for 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Folks, go to thisweek.org.uk, bilderberg.org. Tony mentioned earlier on The Traitors of Arnhem. It's an excellent read about Bormann and everything we've been discussing today. I strongly recommend you get it. Hey, listen, on that, just before we go, because I've got to move on, hundreds of sellers on Amazon have contacted the BBC. Many of them have contacted their MPs to say that Amazon is withholding funds when people make sales, and it's got so bad for some people that they're going out of business. Have you experienced any of that, Tony?
Well, I got booted out by Amazon 2.5 years ago, maybe even three now, because they said that someone was spoofing my account and I needed to prove who I was by sending my birth certificate and my passport to them, and in which case I just hit click, you know, close account.
And gone.
Because, but I mean, they use all sorts of ways. What they're doing, of course, is they're trying to force everyone to use things like eBay, you know, all those various things, etc., get you dependent on them, and then they just switch them off, you know, or bully you through them somehow and say, so, you know, that's the problem that we've got, is that there isn't anywhere near enough competition in the area of online sales. So, yeah, I mean, that sounds exactly the sort of thing Amazon would do. And, of course, they can do what they want, really. I mean, they can use their secret algorithms to say, well, we've got a whole contingent of and profile some of their users and say, actually, we've decided that we don't like the British people, we don't like the British users. So we can, you know, just give them a whole load of extra hoops to jump through before they're allowed to sell or buy anything. And also that they can still send the stuff out, sell it, but we will just hold back the money. I mean, that's just a business decision, and they may decide that they want, you know, they're in a very, very powerful position now, aren't they? And that is part of this dark enlightenment. The enlightenment, Nick Land's dark enlightenment, is the computers will be in charge. And actually, what they've done is they've realized that through things like stock trading software, that computers, they, you know, some people believe and are investing in this, the banksters are investing in it, the computers can run the world a hell of a lot better than anyone else for them. And the rest of us will become superfluous. And governments, of course, are all in debt. They're way behind the curve. They're not legislating on this. And people like Amazon are way ahead of the game, Richie.
Great to have you on, pal. As always, we'll speak in September. Tony Gosling, thanks, mate. Have a great rest of your summer. Tony Gosling, live on Wednesday's Richie Allen Show, thisweek.org.uk. Go to bilderberg.org and do pick up a copy of The Traders of Ireland. It's an outstanding read. I can't recommend it highly enough. Our pal Tony Gosling on Wednesday's programme. Thanks to Tony.